he said. The corner of his lips curled up.
I work at the deli counter. Have to give people their succulent, chemical-ridden salami and whatnot.
I pictured Miles in a dark room, standing at a butcher's block with a large knife in one hand and a bloody cow's leg steadied under the other, a huge Cheshire grin spreading over his face. I bet the customers love you, I said.
They do, when my manager is around.
So do you run jobs there, too?
No. I don't steal from them, thank you very much, said Miles. I'm above common thievery, outside of school.
Why do you do it at all? I asked. It can't just be for the money.
I have reasons.
But, I mean, you know, sometimes they just want to humiliate you. Like, don't you think if you'd gone back through Redwich Bridge on Saturday, Cliff and the others would have tried to scare you?
Probably. Trust me, I know. I've had plenty of embarrassing jobs.
He parked the truck and reached around his seat for his bag.
It's all Schadenfreude. People just want to laugh at you.
Can you really speak German? I already knew the answer. Miles glanced out the side window and then said, almost too low for me to hear,
Ja, ich spreche Deutsch.
A smile stretched across his face.
But don't ask me to do it. It makes me feel like a monkey doing parlor tricks.
We got out of the truck and started toward the school. It must be awful for Jetta, I said.
I think she's used to it. Whenever someone asks her to say something, she curses at them.
She speaks French and Italian, right?
And German and Spanish and Greek and a little Gaelic.
Wow. Can you speak all those?
Not really. I'm just German.
We crossed the parking lot.
Hey, since we're talking about it, I have another job to run on Thursday night. I want you to help.
Why? What can I do?
Extra pair of hands. Art was the only one available. I'll give you a cut of the reward, of course.
It's nothing illegal, right?
Of course not. You'll be fine.
I had no idea how far Miles' definition of legal stretched, but maybe this was his form of a peace offering. He wasn't stupid. If it was really, truly dangerous, I don't think he would have asked. Okay, I guess. Miles went with me to the newspaper room, where I handed over my memory card to Claude Guthrie, showing him the pictures of Brittany's spray-painted car. First, Claude laughed. Then, he downloaded them and sent an email to his father, Assistant Principal Baruso, and McCoy. I didn't miss all the weird looks we got on the way to English. I thought it might be because Miles was smiling, but that didn't seem like it either. I didn't like this new attention. It made my neck itch. I'd hardly finished my perimeter check when Rhea Wolf slid into the desk next to mine, looking eager. Chills ran up my arms and legs at her predatory smile. I wanted to get as far away from her as humanly possible, but I dug my fingernails into the desktop and forced myself to stay put.
Hey, what was Celia like when she was spray-painting Brittany's car?
She asked. Huh?
You were there, weren't you?
I looked around and realized Celia wasn't there, and most of the class was watching us and waiting for my answer. I mean, yeah, I was there, but she was just painting the car. Holy hell. Had it really gotten out that fast? It had barely been 5 minutes.
Are you out to get her or something?
Cliff appeared next to Rhea, talking to me like we were best buddies. He was even worse than Rhea. Every time I saw him, I knew he was half a second from lunging at me with a razor blade.
'Cause that's awesome. She deserves it.
Hey, Clifford, Miles growled from his seat. Go find some other territory to mark.
Hey, Nazi, go find some more Jews to gas,
Clifford shot back. But even as he said it, he stood up and moved back toward his desk.
Do you understand what you're saying when those words come out of your mouth?
Miles asked.
Or do you just repeat what everyone else says because everyone else is saying it?
Cliff settled into his seat.
What the hell are you talking about, Richter? Everyone in this room knows what I'm talking about. Stop calling me a Nazi. Why should I?
Miles' hand came down on his desk.
Because the systematic slaughter of millions of people isn't funny.
His sudden anger quieted the entire room. It even startled Mr. Guthrie out of his newspaper. I had thought he didn't care when people called him a Nazi. A mixed wave of relief and happiness rolled through me that he did care. But why did it make him so angry?
Enough talking!
Mr. Guthrie rose to his feet, looking between Miles and Cliff like he thought they might explode.
Get into your literary discussion pairs, and I don't want to hear a word out of any of you. Understood?
Yes, sir.
Before we begin class today, I'd like to have a nice little chat about the value of respecting another person's property. Does that sound nice to you all?
And so began our 28-and-a-half-minute lesson on why spray paint and car windshields don't mix. Brittany and Stacy watched him intently the whole time, nodding in agreement. Mr. Guthrie gave us a last, disappointed look and told us to get on with our discussion of Heart of Darkness. Tucker, as usual, had already written up our discussion paper. He was being weird again. His expression closed like someone had shut a door inside him. I knew why as soon as he glanced over at Miles.
So, he said, are you two, like, friends now?
I tried to keep my expression neutral. I guess. He gave me a ride here this morning. I paused, then said, he spoke German.
What?
You told me to tell you if he ever started talking with a German accent. I got him to speak German, so that's even better, right? If anything, Tucker looked more upset than before.
Why are you in his club?
Community service.
For what?
It's not a big deal, just a misunderstanding at Hill Park. A smart person would be able to put the Hill Park Gym graffiti incident, which most of East Shoal knew about, together with my community service. But no one knew enough about me. Hill Park and East Shoal hated each other so much it severed the lines of communication. Out here in the boonies of suburban Indiana, it was red versus green, dragons versus sabers. You didn't speak to someone from the other school unless you were spitting in their face. The only reason East Shoal knew about the graffiti at all was because Hill Park's main gym had been closed for several games while they cleaned the floor. My reputation at Hill Park hadn't bled into my time at East Shoal. Not yet. But Tucker was separate from all that. He did know enough about me.
When you two walked in here, he was smiling.
Tucker looked down at his desk, tracing the grooves in its top with his pencil.
I haven't seen him smile since 8th grade.
He's only driving me to school, I reassured him. I'm not going to start hanging out or figuring out scoreboard-related mysteries with him or anything.
No, because that's my job.
Tucker's face lifted, a smile tugging at his lips.
He's on transportation duty, and I get mysteries. I see you building your harem of manservants.
I'm looking at Ackerley next. I think he'd give a killer foot massage. Tucker laughed, but glanced over his shoulder as if Cliff was going to appear behind him and slam his head into the desk. I knew how he felt. For the rest of that week, I felt strangely buoyant. At work, at school, even when I had to go near the scoreboard. Everything was good. Celia was suspended for the paint job. I got all my homework done on time, and even understood my calculus, which was a miracle in itself. Took enough pictures and did enough perimeter checks to put my paranoia at ease. And I had people to talk to. Real people, not homicidal people. Miles drove me to and from school. Like most people, he didn't act the same when you got him alone. He was still an asshat, but alone he was more blue eyes than jerk. On Wednesday, when the club stayed after school to work a swim meet, he even helped me bury Irwin.
You named your bike Erwin?
Sure, why not?
After Erwin Rommel? You named your bike after a Nazi.
Miles narrowed his eyes at me. Erwin's back half swung at his side. My dad got him from the African desert. Plus, Rommel was humane. He got an order straight from Hitler to execute Jews, and he tore it up. And then he traded his family's protection for his own suicide.
Yeah, but he still knew what he was doing and who he was fighting for, said Miles,
but without conviction.
I thought you were scared of Nazis.
My step faltered.
How did you know that? You're a history buff? I assumed that whatever you were scared of would come from history. And Nazis were pretty scary.
The corner of his lips twisted up.
There's that. And whenever someone calls me a Nazi, you get this look on your face like I tried to kill you.
Oh. Good guess. I gripped Erwin's handlebars tighter. We rounded the back of the school and headed for the dumpster behind the kitchen doors. I could smell tobacco and wood shavings and suspected Miles's jacket. He wore it every day now. He pushed the top off the dumpster and we tossed Erwin's halves inside, closing the lid on my poor bike forever.
Why does being called a Nazi make you so mad? I asked. I mean, I don't know why anyone would be happy about it, but I thought you were going to rip Cliff's teeth out the other day.
He shrugged.
People are ignorant. I don't know.
He knew. Miles always knew.
As we turned back toward the gym, he said, Heard you've been on some sort of scavenger hunt with Beaumont.
Yep. Jealous? It sort of slipped out. I was too paralyzed to say anything else. He didn't know about the library, did he? He couldn't know that I'd found out about his mom. But then he snorted loudly and said,
Hardly.
I relaxed.
What is everyone's problem with him? I don't think he's that bad, honestly.
Yeah, he's got a cult in a closet, but he's really nice.
He hates you.
But doesn't everyone?
He actually has a reason to hate me, though. Everyone else does it because it's expected.
What reason?
Miles paused. We were friends in middle school, he said. I thought he was a decent guy because we were both smart. We got along well. And I was new, and he didn't make fun of my accent. But when we got here, I realized he lets other people walk all over him. He's got no ambition, no drive, no end goal.
And what kind of ambition do you have? I thought. The kind where you see how effectively you can kill someone's puppy?
He's smart, Miles continued. He's really smart, but he doesn't put it to use. He could have as much leverage as I do, but he sits around with his stupid conspiracies and does his little chemistry equations and obsesses over girls who won't look twice at him.
Like who?
Like Rhea.
Tucker likes Rhea? How did I not know that?
Since I've known him. If he had any sense, he would have tossed out that romanticized idea of her he's had for so long and gotten to work on something useful.
So you ditched him? I said.
Well, yeah.
You ditched your friend, your only friend, because he didn't want to help you control the school. Miles's lips tightened into a thin line.
No, not that.
Because he's got no ambition, no end goal.
Yeah.
I scoffed at him. He looked over at me with the magnificently quirked eyebrow, but I could tell his heart wasn't in it. You're a jerk. I said, walking off. Miles went ahead to the pool while I searched the storage rooms behind the gym for extra towels for the swimmers. I had to walk past the gym doors to get there, and I stopped when I heard voices inside.
You're not giving her the support she needs, said a sickly sweet voice.
I'm trying. I swear I'm trying.
McCoy, talking to Celia's mother. So there was a connection between them. I couldn't let this pass me by. I ducked into the gym and under the bleachers, checking the scaffolding for microphones as I climbed through to the other side. McCoy stood before the scoreboard, his gray hair disheveled, his suit wrinkled.
I crouched down as far as I could and turned my camera on, pointing it toward McCoy and the woman who stood with her back to me. Today, her blonde hair was done back in a tight braid.
"I know she's your daughter," McCoy said, "but she's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. She's not like you were.
Celia is as smart as any of these idiots. She needs more focus, that's all," drawled the woman.
"She needs to get her head out of the clouds and see what's really important. What I'm handing her on a silver platter."
McCoy raised his hands pleadingly.
"I want this to be easy. I want to be there for her."
Celia's mother scoffed.
"Please, Richard, if you really want to help her, you'll show her this is about her future. Continuing the legacy I left her. She has the potential to be the best."
She paused, chewing on her words. Her bright nails tapped against her arm.
"She failed in cheerleading. Surely you can do something about that?"
"I can't give Celia that spot just because she threw a tantrum. It'll have to be something else."
"Fine. Then do something about the boy. Remove the distractions."
"Richter is a problem. I don't understand what she sees in him, or what she thinks is going to happen. He wants nothing to do with her."
"It doesn't matter what he wants. As long as Celia wants him, we have problems."
McCoy sighed.
"I can only help as long as she doesn't try to fix the problem on her own. I have everything she needs."
"I'm glad you're putting that principal position to good use."
Celia's mother's voice went sweet again.
"Thank you, Richard. For everything."
She reached out to stroke his face. Then she strode past him out of the gym. He waited a minute, then followed. I retreated underneath the bleachers, shut my camera off, and tried to make sense of what I'd just heard. McCoy knew Celia's mother. McCoy really was helping her with some strange, destructive plan to make Celia the queen of the school. They were going to remove the distractions. That meant Miles. Chapter 24.
"Quickly, another."
"I've got one."
"Do you play a sport?"
"God damn it, you already know it, don't you?"
"You're Pele."
Evan had been running his hand through his hair, and he ripped it away so fast he tore some out.
"How?
How did you get it without even asking me any questions?" Miles laced his fingers together on his chest and stared at the ceiling of the gym, not answering. The rest of us sat in a circle around him while the boys' basketball team practiced on the court below. Jetta pulled a single grape out of her lunchbox and dropped it in Miles's mouth. He took his sweet time chewing his reward.
"Last week you said you had started getting really into football," he finally said.
"Soccer," Ian said.
"Football,"
Jetta hissed, kicking Ian in the shin. Miles ignored them.
"Don't pick one of the most celebrated players in the sport next time."
"I have one, boss," Art said.
"Are you alive?"
Miles started with that question when he wasn't quite sure where you were coming from. At least that's what I thought at first. After watching him play this game with the members of the club over a few months, I'd noticed a pattern. He smashed Theo, Evan, and Ian under his mental heel because it encouraged them to try to beat him. But he always gave Jetta and Art some leeway.
"Yes? Are you male?"
"Yes."
"Do you have a TV show?"
"No."
"Did you have a TV show at any point in your life?"
Art's smile never got very big, but it gave away every single thought in his head.
"Yes." "Did you wear bow ties?"
Art kept smiling.
"No."
Miles had to tilt his head back against the bleacher to see Art.
"Really? Interesting. Give up?"
Art asked.
"No. You're Norm Abram. It was either Bill Nye or someone involved in woodworking."
Evan, Ian, and Theo let out a collective groan. Jetta fed Miles another grape. Art shrugged and said,
"My dad got me hooked on this old house when I was a kid.
Miles waved his hand toward me.
You go.
I hadn't had a turn at this since that first time with the Aztec emperors. He'd never invited me before now. Okay, I have someone.
Are you alive?
No.
You're a historian. Of course you're going to pick a dead person. Are you male?
Yes.
Are you from North America or South America?
No. He turned his head to stare me straight in the eye, like he could read my thoughts if he only focused hard enough.
Europe is a trap. Are you from Asia?
Yes.
Did you have a significant effect on the development of some strain of philosophy that profoundly impacted the world?
Why don't you ask us questions like that? Theo blurted out. I stifled a laugh. Yes.
Miles sat and thought for a moment. He was only at 5 questions, and he was already getting pretty close. Are you from China?
No.
Are you from India?
Nope.
He narrowed his eyes at me. Are you from the Middle East?
Yes.
Did you practice Islam?
Yes.
Were you born before 1500 AD?
Yes.
Did you contribute to the field of medicine?
Yes. Miles turned to the ceiling again and closed his eyes.
Are you also known as the father of modern medicine?
Ian frowned.
Hippocrates was a Muslim?
I'm not Hippocrates, I said. I'm Ibn Sina.
You know, part of this game is not telling Boss who you are before he guesses it, Evan said.
I shrugged. He already knew. I turned back to Miles. And we got to 12. But hey, at least you didn't drag it out just to show off like you did last time. He grunted.
Jetta looked up to the gym doors, then back to Miles.
Mein Chef, der Teufel ist hier.
We all turned to look. Mr. McCoy strode into the gym, straightening his jacket and tie, his gaze zeroed in on our group. He edged around the basketball practice and stopped at the foot of the bleachers.
Mr. Richter, he called up.
He sounded like his jaw had been wired shut.
May I speak to you for a moment?
Yes,
Miles said. He didn't move. McCoy waited a total of 4 seconds before he added,
In private, Mr. Richter?
Miles pushed himself to his feet, stepped past me, and climbed down the bleachers. As he and McCoy walked to the far end of the gym out of earshot, Evan and Ian gave identical, exaggerated shudders.
Careful. Don't let him out of your sight, said Evan.
Yeah,
Ian added.
McCoy might pop out Boss's eyes with a melon baller and use them like olives in his martinis.
What? I said. Why?
Der Teufel hasst, Chef, Jetta said.
I don't know what that means.
McCoy hates Boss,
Theo explained. I would say my brothers are being obnoxious, but there's a good chance McCoy actually has a melon baller in his desk drawer with Boss's name on it. Seriously, though, I said, is it just the way everyone hates him? Because it probably sucks to be the principal who has to deal with him.
Please let it be only that way. Please let it not be anything out of the ordinary.
No, no, Evan said. Listen, you could say Ian and I have made the front office our second home. How many times would you say we've been sent there in 3 years, Ian?
Ian tapped his chin.
Give or take 4 times per semester?
We're actually due.
So we know a little bit about what goes on in that guy's office. He talks about Boss all the time. Boss is pretty careful with his stuff, you know. So McCoy doesn't have anything on him. But he has all these theories he's always telling Assistant Principal Baruso, that Boss has weapons or drugs, just a bunch of ridiculous stories. He legit wants Boss kicked out. This was East Shoal. Of course it was out of the ordinary.
But why? I asked. He can't just be annoyed. What would cause that? Evan shrugged. All I know, said Ian, is that McCoy didn't just make this club and force Boss to lead it because he wanted to stop Boss from plastering people's homework on the ceiling. He did it because he wants to keep Boss in his sights. So the possibly mentally unstable McCoy had his crosshairs locked on Miles. Why? Why would he care so much about Miles? Why would McCoy try to hurt him? Or was I being paranoid? Was McCoy just dealing with an unruly student? Could I take that chance?
Don't worry, Alex, Jetta said,
lounging back with her bundle of grapes.
If he tries to hurt mine chef, we will send him back to the hell he came from.
Coming from Jetta, that was refreshingly reassuring. Miles returned to the bleachers a few minutes later, both eyes still in his head. I looked him over three times before doing a quick perimeter check. Nothing strange, but I couldn't deny the gut instinct that told me something bad was coming. Blue Eyes was a little candle flame in the darkness, and even though I didn't know for sure if Miles really was Blue Eyes, I couldn't let him be snuffed out. Chapter 25. I sat by my window on the night of the job, waiting for the signal. My fingers jittered against the windowsill and my feet sweated in my shoes, despite the cold outside. Dad snored in the room down the hall, and if he was snoring, that meant both he and my mother were asleep. In the room next to mine, Charlie mumbled something about sugar-coated chess pieces. All they had to do was stay asleep for the next 2 hours and everything would be fine. I double and triple-checked with Art to make sure the job was mostly safe and would definitely be over in 2 hours. I still didn't know exactly what the job was or what I was supposed to do. But then I realized I didn't care. I was going to enjoy tonight's adrenaline rush if it killed me. I wanted to be a teenager. I wanted to sneak out at night, not while under the impression I was being kidnapped by communists, and do things I wasn't supposed to do. I wanted to do them with other people. Real people. People who knew there was something different about me and didn't care. Art's van rolled up at the end of the street, flashing its headlights. As quietly as I could, I removed the screen from my window, set it against the wall, climbed into the flower bed outside, and slid the storm window shut behind me. Just like a nighttime trip to Redwich Bridge. I set off down the slush-streaked street, squinted to make sure it was actually Art in the driver's seat, then climbed into the passenger side.
"Okay, now we have to go get Boss," Art said.
I buckled myself in. "Where are we going?"
"Downing Heights."
Art smiled a little.
"I know you love it there."
"Oh, but I do," I mumbled. "Tell me we're not going to Celia's."
"Nope. But first we have to get Boss, and he definitely doesn't live in Downing Heights."
Silent houses flicked by. In the distance, expensive Lakeview houses rose like dark mountains. But around us, each house was less friendly than the last. Suddenly, my dirt-colored hovel of a home seemed so much nicer than before. We turned a corner, and the houses became downright scary. Like bloody Miles trying to murder me scary. I wouldn't have come down this way even at high noon. Art stopped in front of a two-story house that looked like staples held it together at the corners. Shingles were missing all over the roof. Half the windows had glass broken out of them, and the porch sagged in the middle. Garbage littered a front lawn enclosed by a rusty chain-link fence. Miles's blue truck sat in the driveway, next to an aging Mustang that looked like it might be worth a lot of money if anyone tried to take care of it. I knew something here must have been a delusion. Something. The darkness made everything worse, but this place? No one could live like this. This had to be fake.
"Uh-oh. Ohio's outside."
Art nodded toward the side of the porch, where a makeshift doghouse gave shelter to the biggest Rottweiler I'd ever seen in my life. It looked like the kind of dog that ate babies for breakfast, old men for lunch, and virgin sacrifices for dinner.
No wonder he was Miles's dog.
He lives here?
I leaned forward for a better look at the house.
How is this even habitable?
It's not, I don't think. His dad survives by constantly surrounding himself in a booze haze and setting the hellhound loose on the neighbors.
Art shuddered.
The first time we ever picked Boss up, Ohio was awake. I thought he would bite my head off, and I never got out of a van.
I had never imagined big, bulky Art being scared of anything. I didn't know what I'd expected, but it wasn't this. So Miles wasn't rich. I'd still expected something a little nicer.
What does his dad do?
Art shrugged.
I think he's some kind of security guard downtown. There's only the two of them, so I don't think they're hard up for cash. But no one takes care of this place.
Movement on the second floor distracted me. The window on the far left slid open. A dark figure crept through the narrow opening like a cat and reached back in for a coat and a pair of shoes. He put on the coat but carried the shoes, then hurried to the side of the porch roof, lowered himself down the drainpipe like a ghost, and dropped silently on the balls of his feet right on top of the doghouse. Ohio gave a snort, but he didn't wake up. The figure climbed off the doghouse, padded across the yard, hopped the fence, and ran around to the back of the van. I forced myself to start breathing again. Miles climbed in through the back, shaking slush out of his hair and socks. He shoved his feet into his shoes. Art pulled away from the house.
Damn, dog.
Miles flopped over, resting his head back. It was still weird seeing him this way. Jeans and an old baseball shirt under his bomber jacket. Boots that looked like chew toys. He raked his hair back, cracked an eye open, and caught me staring.
I live in Shittsville, I know.
He looked at Art.
Did you get the stuff?
Behind me.
Miles grabbed the black duffel bag stashed behind the driver's seat and dumped the contents onto the floor, where they rolled around. A container of Icy Hot, a bag of little black specks, 5 or 6 heavy-duty bungee cords, a screwdriver, a socket wrench, and a small sledgehammer.
What'd you bring this for?
Miles asked, picking up the sledgehammer. Art shrugged.
Thought it'd be fun, in case we need to smash anything.
I snorted. Art's hands were like 2 sledgehammers on their own.
Don't smash anything too expensive. I told Alex we weren't committing any felonies.
Boss, what do you call breaking and entering?
A felony,
said Miles.
But it's not breaking and entering if you've got a key.
He pulled a single key out of his pocket and held it up.
Where the hell'd you get a key?
I've got someone on the inside. Turn here, he's the 3rd house on the left.
We were back in Downing Heights, winding our way up the road toward the super fancy houses. We stopped in front of one that looked like it could have been Bill Gates's 2nd home. The front walk led up to a 3-door garage and a huge porch with a stained glass double door. Miles shoved everything but the screwdriver, wrench, and sledgehammer into the duffel bag.
Art, you've got the car. Alex, you're coming with me.
He checked his watch.
Hopefully no one wakes up. Let's go.
We got out of the van and jogged toward the house. Miles stopped beside the front door, flipped open the security keypad, and typed in a code. He turned to the door and unlocked it with the key. The doors swung open. We stepped inside an entryway. Miles closed the door behind us and checked the other keypad inside the door, then motioned to another nearby door that must have led to the garage. Art headed through it with the screwdriver, wrench, and sledgehammer clutched in one hand. This house belonged in Hollywood, not central Indiana. A huge staircase occupied the middle of the foyer. A foyer. They had a freaking foyer. Splitting off in 2 directions upstairs. To the right of the foyer was a living room, where the light from a TV flickered across the far wall. I hit Miles on the arm, pointing at the light. He shook his head and watched the doorway. And a second later, a black-haired girl in paisley pajamas stepped into the foyer. She rubbed her eyes with one hand, staring straight at us.
"Hey, Angela," said Miles, calm as could be.
The girl yawned and waved.
"Hi, Miles." "He's fast asleep. I crushed those pills up in his dinner, like you said."
"Awesome. Thanks."
Miles pulled out his wallet and handed Angela a $20 bill.
"Good work. He's still in the same room, right?"
"Fourth on the right," said Angela. "Mom and Dad are on the left, so you shouldn't have to worry about them."
"Thanks. Let's go."
The two of us set off up the stairs. At the top, we turned to the right and crept down a long hallway. It was all so disturbingly normal, besides the sheer amount of money that must have gone into it, that for a moment I thought the whole place might be a hallucination. Miles stopped at the fourth door on the left, touched the handle hesitantly a few times as if he thought it'd be scalding hot, and then pushed the door open. Whoever owned the room was incredibly disorganized. Clothes lay all over the floor. Papers and diagrams and maps of different places littered a desk along one wall. Models of cars and superheroes and mechanical animals covered the top of the dresser. Science posters were taped to every wall, including one of the periodic table that glowed in the dark. The sleeper rolled over.
"Here."
Miles unzipped the backpack and pulled out the container of Icy Hot.
"Go to the dresser. Should be one of the top drawers. Smear this in the crotch of every pair of underwear you find."
What? I took the container. "That's disgusting."
"I'm paying you $50 for this,"
Miles hissed, turning toward the bed. I went to the dresser and yanked open the top drawer on the left. Empty. Crisp white underwear and boxers filled the one on the right.
Well, at least they were clean.
I picked up the first pair of underwear and uncapped the Icy Hot. As I worked, I watched Miles out of the corner of my eye as he yanked the bed covers back and harnessed the sleeper to the bed with the bungee cords from his shoulders to his ankles. Then Miles upended the bag of black specks, fleas, over the sleeper's head.
"Okay, I'm done," I whispered.
I slid the drawer shut again. "Now pick up every pair of underwear you can find on the floor and shove them under the dresser."
Miles began setting the alarm clock on the bedside table. With my index finger and thumb, I played a sort of crane game and picked up pairs of underwear, touching them as little as possible. I made a pile next to the dresser and shoved it under with my foot.
"The sleeping pills should wear off before the alarm goes," said Miles.
I handed him back the Icy Hot.
"All we have to do is get out of here."
I crept over to the bed to get a better look at our poor, unsuspecting victim. I froze.
"Oh, my God, Miles!"
"What?"
"It's Tucker!"
He looked so innocent in his Einstein t-shirt and pajama pants covered in atoms. And I put Icy Hot in his underwear.
"Calm down."
Miles grabbed my wrist and pulled me out of the room. We hurried down the stairs and back into the foyer, where Angela waved to us from the living room. Then we were out on the porch. Miles locked the door and reset the security system, and we ran to the van. Art waited in the front.
"You dick!"
I said once the doors were closed and Art stepped on the gas. I punched Miles' arm with all the anger welling up in me. "You didn't tell me it was Tucker."
"Would you have done it if I had?"
Miles asked.
"Of course not."
"Yeah, but you were fine doing it if it's anyone else."
Miles shoved his glasses up to rub his eyes.
"Bit hypocritical if you ask me."
"I didn't ask you."
I crossed my arms and glared out the window. Awful guilt roiled in my stomach. "You should have told me."
"Why? Because you feel bad for him? Because he follows you around like a dog? He's never going to know you helped. He's going to be flustered and uncomfortable, and you'll be $50 richer."
Another flood of anger shot through my limbs. "It doesn't matter. It's the principle of the thing."
"No, it's not. Not when you suddenly decide it's bad because it's Beaumont."
We glared at each other for a minute, until Art coughed. My arms tightened. "You're an asshole," I said, looking away.
"Takes one to know one,"
Miles muttered back.
Chapter 26. The next morning, Miles actually showed up at my house. But I let 7 o'clock come and go and asked Dad to drive me to school. He'd noticed something was wrong when I'd done a nosedive into my cereal without even checking it for trackers first. When he asked, I said that I hadn't been able to sleep. Still, as soon as we hit the school parking lot, I was wide awake. He dropped me off at the main entrance. I did a perimeter check, took note of the men, real or not real, standing on the roof, and shouldered my backpack. I got the overwhelming feeling that people were staring at my hair. When I looked around, no one was even paying attention to me. Miles was at the lockers, standing in front of his open door, stuffing books in. When I opened my locker, a crisp $50 bill fluttered to my feet. I scooped it up and shoved it at Miles. "I don't want it." He quirked an eyebrow.
"Well, that's too bad, because it's yours."
"I'm not taking it." I threw the bill on top of his books.
"It's $50. Surely you could use that for something."
"Oh, I bet I could. Thing is, I won't."
"Why, because of some misplaced sense of morality?"
Miles spat.
"Trust me, Beaumont doesn't deserve your guilt."
"Who are you to decide that?" I tried very hard not to punch him in the face or kick him in the crotch. "You don't like him because he's a better person than you are. He doesn't resort to stealing and sabotage just to get other people to listen to him." Miles looked like he was keeping himself from saying something nasty, but he shook his head and tucked the 50 back into his pocket. As I walked to class, all I could think about was why I had ever wanted to kiss him. But then I heard the unearthly shrieks coming from Mr. Gunthery's room. A large group of students had formed outside the door. I shoved my way through and jumped to the side in case of projectiles. Celia was back, her fingers tangled in Stacy Burns's ponytail, screaming at the top of her lungs. Her hair, once blonde, was now grass green. Brittany Carver stood on Stacy's other side, trying to pry Celia's fingers away. Celia swung forward and planted her fist in Stacy's face with a crunch. Claude Gunthery tossed a few freshmen out of the doorway and sprinted into the room, grabbing Celia around the waist and lifting her off her feet. "Get off me! You fuckers did this! I'm going to kill you!"
"We didn't do it!"
Stacy yelled back, blood dripping from her lip.
"Let me go!"
"Someone grab her arms!"
Claude grunted under Celia's weight.
"She's gonna... Ugh!"
Celia elbowed him in the face.
"What?"
Theo shot up and lunged for the arm Celia had hit Claude with, looking prepared to rip it off.
"What's going on? Break it up, all of you."
As if he had the hands of God, Mr. Gunthery thundered into the room, took Celia's collar in one hand and Stacy's in the other, and lifted them off their feet. They both looked so thoroughly shocked when he put them back down they fell quiet and let each other go.
"Claude, take Burns to the nurse. Hendricks, you're coming with me."
Mr. Gunthery paused a moment, sizing Celia up, and then said,
"Why did you dye your hair green?"
Celia began screaming again, and Mr. Gunthery had to lock his arms around her to drag her from the room. Stacy, clutching her jaw, marched out without Claude. Claude, sporting a bloody nose, followed. Theo managed to slip out of the room with him. I sank into a seat. Had Stacy and Brittany really dyed Celia's hair green? Or was it another of Celia's stunts to draw attention to herself? The whispers got louder. Miles walked in, looking a little put off by the half-empty room and everyone in the wrong seats. He sat down without acknowledging me. Cliff and Rhea were back at Rhea's desk, snickering and glancing at the door every few seconds. Then Rhea's face went so red, and Cliff began laughing so hard that I turned and looked too. Tucker hobbled into the room, bow-legged. D deep bags ringed his eyes and both hands scrubbed at his uncombed black hair. His tie hung loose around his collar and his shirt was untucked. He gingerly lowered himself into his seat, wincing as he settled, and began scratching himself all over. I slid out of my seat and hurried across the room.
Are you okay?
Are you okay is probably one of the top five stupidest questions ever. 99% of the time, it's easier to use a tiny bit of common sense. However, in the current situation, I could think of nothing better to say, because I'm so sorry for putting icy hot in your underwear is not the first thing you want to tell a person who does not, in fact, know that you were the one who put icy hot in his underwear. Tucker folded his hands in his lap as if he'd finally realized he looked like a rabid monkey.
No, he said. I woke up this morning and felt like I was on an acid trip. I'm itching all over and I don't know why.
He leaned closer, shifting around uncomfortably in his seat.
And it feels like someone set my underwear on fire.
I pressed my fist to my forehead, my stomach twisting itself into knots.
I know what happened, he began.
I stared at him in horror, but he kept going.
Not the specifics, but I know what happened, and why. And I know it was Richter. I know it was him because he's the only person who could get in and out of my house in the middle of the night without tripping the alarm. At least he's the only person who would do it for the sole purpose of screwing with me.
Tucker shot a glare over my shoulder at Miles.
Look at him. He's not even subtle about it. He's staring at us right now.
I didn't look. It can't be that bad, right? What happened? He shook his head.
I don't know. My alarm went off an hour late, and everything's been going wrong since. I got halfway to school and my car broke down.
Tucker paused for a moment to absentmindedly scratch his chest.
There was more than one person helping him, I think. Richter never did understand cars. Probably somebody in that club.
Tucker stopped again.
You didn't. You didn't help him, did you?
Maybe it took me a second too long to answer. Maybe I looked the wrong direction or pulled a little too hard on my hair. But understanding washed over Tucker's face before I could start blurting out denials. He turned his whole body away from me.
Why had I hesitated? Why hadn't I done what I'd planned to do and told him everything?
Chapter 27. By lunch, the story of what happened in Mr. Guntry's class had spread to the entire school. Claude's nose was swollen and bruised, and he winced every time he tried to talk. Stacy hadn't returned from the nurse, but Brittany walked around complaining about Celia's bitchiness to anyone who would listen. I was 90% sure Celia herself had gotten suspended. Again. I didn't see Tucker for the rest of the day, and it made me hate myself. I mean, forget that there wouldn't be another library trip to look up anything about McCoy, or any more conspiring at Finnegan's. I should have asked Miles whose house it was. And I knew Miles had been at least a little right when he'd called me a hypocrite for saying it was wrong just because it was Tucker. It should have been wrong no matter who it was. But I'd done it anyway. By seventh period chemistry, the last thing I wanted to do was stand at a lab table for 50 minutes with Miles. I'd avoided talking to him all day. But the lab forced me to relay data about chemical reactions with certain types of metals so he could write it down. I don't know why he didn't just do it himself. The samples were easy enough to examine. But after every reaction, he stood there looking at me, waiting for the result. Apparently, this made him think I'd forgiven him. After class, he followed me all the way to the lockers and then to the gym. Quiet. Until we saw Celia being led from the main office by her father and the school security guard.
Celia was never like this before, Miles said. She liked to bother me, but she never did anything to other people. I think something strange is going on, but I don't know what.
I turned and looked at the glass display case outside the gym, as if I couldn't care less about him or Celia. You seem to be under the impression that I'm talking to you.
You were in chemistry, said Miles. So we could do our lab.
I heard his molars grinding together.
Fine. I'm sorry,
He said the word through gritted teeth.
Are you happy now?
Sorry for what? I looked at Scarlet's picture again. The thing was entirely scribbled over in red now. I wished I had Finnegan's magic eight ball. Miles rolled his eyes.
For, I don't know, for not telling you it was Beaumont?
And?
And for making you put Icy Hot in his underwear.
It was cruel.
So that makes you think it was my idea? I don't come up with this stuff. I just do it for people.
At the look I gave him next, his hands shot up in surrender.
Sorry, sorry, really. All right. If you're not going to talk to me, will you at least listen?
Depends on what you have to say. Miles looked around to see if we were alone, then took a deep breath.
I have some stuff I need to tell you because I feel like I owe it to you. I don't know why I feel like that, and I don't like feeling like that, but there you go.
I was surprised, but didn't say anything. Miles took another deep breath.
First of all, and if I don't tell anyone about you, you can't tell anyone about this. My mom is in a psychiatric hospital.
Was I supposed to be surprised? Confused? I didn't think he'd actually tell me. But now I didn't have to feel bad about the imbalance of secrets between us. What?
No, you're lying. I'm not. She's in a hospital up north in Goshen. I visit her once a month. Twice if I can manage it.
You're serious?
Yes. Again, you never believe me. I don't understand why someone would lie about that. I'm trying to make things better, but if you aren't going to listen, then I'll stop talking.
No, sorry. Keep going, I said quickly. Miles gave me a shrewd look.
You're going to shut up and listen?
Yes. Promise.
Well, since I know you want to know what she's in for, it's nothing. She's always been a little off-kilter. But never bad enough to be committed. Never bad enough to stay in there. But denying that you're crazy tends to make people think you're more crazy.
I made an understanding noise.
And that was how my dad convinced them at first. Said she denied it all the time. First he told them her bruises and the black eyes and the busted lips were all her fault. That she caused them in fits of depression and rage, that she was bipolar. And he didn't trust her anymore. And of course, as soon as she heard that, she was furious, which made it worse.
He made a disgusted sort of noise in the back of his throat.
And then, the lake.
The lake?
He threw her in a lake, rescued her, and told them she tried to commit suicide. She was hysterical. No one bothered to look for evidence against him. That's when I started running jobs for people. And now I take all the late shifts I can at work and forget the underage work laws because I don't care. I'm getting her out of that place when I turn 18 in May. And I need the money for her so she has something, you know? Because my father's not going to give her anything. And I can't let her go back to that house.
Miles stopped suddenly. Eyes focused on a spot to the left of my head. Unease filled my stomach. The kind you get from suddenly knowing a whole lot more about a person than you thought you ever would. So are you...
Not done yet,
he snapped.
Sometimes I have trouble understanding things. Emotional things. I don't understand why people get upset about certain stuff. I don't understand why Tucker doesn't try to be more than he is. And I still haven't figured out why you kissed me.
Okay. I could have died then. Just crawled on the floor and died.
Have you heard the term alexithymia before?
He asked. I shook my head.
It means without words for emotions. Except it's more than that. It's almost a mental disorder, but there's a sort of scale.
The higher your alexithymia score, the more trouble you have interpreting emotions and things like that. My score isn't as high as some, but it's not the lowest.
Oh.
Yeah, so, sorry if I come across callous sometimes. Or, I don't know, defensive? Most of the time, I'm just confused.
So does that mean you don't care about the people you hurt when you run those jobs? I asked.
I'm not sociopathic. It just takes a while for me to process. I'm pretty good at turning off my guilt when I don't want it. But I can't stop. It's an easy way to get money. It keeps anyone from getting too close to me, and I feel safe.
What do you mean?
I mean that when I'm doing everyone else's dirty work and everyone is afraid of me, I feel safe. I control what happens and to who.
Whom? I mumbled. And to my surprise, he smiled.
Right. Whom?
I got the feeling the smile wasn't only because I had corrected his grammar. I wondered if he'd ever told anyone any of that before. And then wondered about his mother in Goshen, and exactly how he planned to get her out while his dad was still around. I wondered what he would do if his little dictatorship over the school ever crumbled. I peered back into the trophy case. Scarlett's picture screamed at me. I might know something about what's going on with Celia, I finally said. I told him everything I knew about Celia, Celia's mother, McCoy, Scarlett, and the scoreboard. How Tucker had been helping me look up information about it, but we'd reached a dead end. I know McCoy doesn't like you, and Celia does, I added. And that worries me. I think they're both really unstable. McCoy needs some kind of psychiatric help, and I don't think he's going to get it. I don't think he even knows or cares. And I know, it's like I'm the crazy girl making up crazy stories. Why would you listen to me? But if you could just do me a favor and watch out. He stared at me, blinked. Then he nodded and said,
okay, I'll be careful.
Chapter 28. Celia's second suspension wasn't announced exactly, but everyone in the school knew the details. Thanks to her lawyer of a father, and some unforeseen intervention from Satan himself, because who else would come to her rescue, Celia wasn't expelled. That was the bad news. The good news was that she'd be gone for the rest of the semester. The other bad news was that the semester was only 10 more days. And the entire club saw the other bad news coming from a mile away. When the semester was up, Celia would be back. And she'd be doing community service. The only person who didn't seem to like the good news or the bad news was Principal McCoy, who only became more short-tempered and irritable after Celia was gone. His morning announcements were short and curt, and he didn't say anything about the scoreboard. In the afternoons, he could often be found outside the gym watching the club work. I knew Miles was a big boy and could take care of himself, but if there was ever a time to put my finely honed sense of paranoia to good use, it was now. During those 10 days, the school went back to relative normality. Maybe it was the Christmas spirit in the air, or the thought of a 2-week vacation, but everyone seemed a lot more lighthearted, in spite of finals. Presents were exchanged. I saw small people dressed in red and green flitting between classrooms. I made everyone in the club Christmas cards and attached a Greek drachma from the 1800s to each one, unsure if they'd think it was stupid. I gave Miles his first to see how he'd react. I fixed my goggles on my face at the lab table as he weighed the card in his hand. Then he opened it up as if it had a bomb inside. He pulled the coin out and studied it.
A drachma? Is it real? Where'd you get it?
My dad's an archaeologist. He picks up stuff all over the place. And the coins were one of the things he'd brought home that I knew were real.
But
This could be worth a lot of money, said Miles. Why are you giving it to me?
Don't feel too special. I pulled out the test tube.